Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you. And we welcome in our friend Jared Stillman to the program, as we do every Friday morning at 7 o'clock. Jared, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We are good. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. I would imagine that Louisville Twitter this morning, very similar to Vol Twitter and their glee that they're taking, and Mark Pope being hired by Kentucky to be their next men's basketball coach. What do you make of that hire and the way this whole thing went down for Kentucky?
So have you guys gotten much into the Twitter Spaces thing yet?
Yes, I've dabbled.
So I know Joe hasn't. I know Joe hasn't. I mean, the Twitter Spaces.
I've been forced to be on some.
It's kind of like the new message board. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's like the fringe extremists of the fan base. Like, they can't wait for the next radio show at 6 a.m. So they just, like, they have a Twitter space or whatever. So last night, you know, I got in bed and I'd seen that Mark Pope was going to be hired as Kentucky's head coach. And I got on, and Drew Diener, my old co-host in Louisville, who Joe knows, was hosting a Twitter space, and I was like, I got to listen to this. And I click it, and it was the Louisville fans just, oh, ha, 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 yes, oh, it's so great. And then I saw Matt Jones, Kentucky Sports Radio, was hosting a Twitter space, and I was like, I got to listen to this. I started listening to that. I listened to that for like an hour. He was talking to he was letting the fans talk.
Just an hour?
What's that?
Just an hour?
Oh, my God. I'm sure it went on longer than that. I mean, and not only that, what was crazy was I clicked it, and I saw, like, the other people who were listening. There were, like, 20,000 people listening.
That's wild.
And there were, like, real people. Like, Jimmy Dykes was listening. Tom Hart was listening. Like, real, like, media, college basketball people. Like, real people were listening. And at one point, Jones just goes, I mean, the crazy thing is, I think there's a lot of people listening to this right now who's just enjoying our misery. And I was like, yes, we are.
That's okay. A really good Matt Jones, by the way. Well done.
That was pretty good. Okay, so, all right, I did see something, and it was, I think it was somebody maybe took a screenshot of this, and it had Nate Oates on it. But this is what I did, and I don't know if you saw this, but this is what I didn't understand. But it had, because it shows other people, right? Mm-hmm. And it had Nate Oates. But it had a crying on his thing. It kept having a laughing, crying emoji. And I'm like, wait, is that Nate Oates listening and also showing people a laughing, crying emoji? It's probably too good to be true.
So I don't think, like, any, like, you know, people who wouldn't want to be caught in a Kentucky Twitter space was actually in there. Like, for instance, on Jimmy Dykes, like, I clicked it and saw that it was Jimmy Dykes' profile.
Correct.
You know, just like I found out yesterday, somehow I'm blocked by Thurman Thomas on Twitter. I don't know what I said. I don't know what I did. But I was looking at who O.J. Simpson followed yesterday, and I saw Thurman Thomas blocked me. I was like, what'd I do to Thurman Thomas? Wow. I'm like, I thought Thurman Thomas was pretty good running back in the day. Like, what'd I do there?
Oh, man, that's pretty good.
Let me say this on the Mark Pope front. I actually was listening to Joe, you know, earlier today. Joe probably has insight on this that most Kentucky fans don't want to hear. Because Joe, the last Kentucky search, everybody thinks like Kentucky went on a mission to go, you know, have Cal pilot the mothership, and that's not really what happened. Because they went after Billy Donovan and they went after Tom Izzo, and when both guys turned down the opportunity to interview, then that's when Kentucky said, okay, we have to get Calipari. We don't want to hire Calipari, but we have to hire Calipari, and that's what they did. And I think with the Mark Pope thing, like, Mitch Barnhart is the kind of guy who he doesn't want to hire Calipari. Like, he doesn't want to hire Bruce Pearl. He doesn't want to hire Chris Beard. Like, he doesn't want that guy to be his coach. And so if you're not – the way that the coaching market works now is you either have to take what I consider like a prospect coach, right? Like we got at Louisville Charleston's coach, you know, Scarbini State. You got to hire that guy. Or you got to hire an assistant coach who's might be Kirby Smart, might be Kenny Payne. I don't know. You have to hire that guy, or you have to, you know, get the dented used car. And I think that Barnhart decided he didn't want the dented used car in Bruce Pearl or Chris Beard or whomever, and decided to go with Mark Pope. And there's no way to know whether or not these guys are going to be any good, because I thought
there's some way.
Well, I mean, but didn't you think Scott Frost was going to be incredible at Nebraska?
Yeah. It's easy to be wrong, but I mean, you got to have some kind of track record, right?
I mean, I keep going back to, again, I used Kirby Smart and Kenny Payne just a minute ago. I mean, their resumes are pretty much the same, right? Like, assistant coach of a national championship team on a team that can recruit better than anybody else, and they're considered kind of the main recruiter for that team, even though the head coach we know is the most important person of that. In Kirby's case, it was Saban. In Kenny Payne's case, it was Calipari. And then they get the job at their alma mater, and Kirby Smart goes to Georgia and immediately builds Georgia up into Alabama 2.0. And Kenny Payne gets to Louisville and doesn't recruit any players and wins 12 games over 2 years. Like, it's so hard to look at a resume and say, oh, yeah, this guy, he's great. He's, you know, I was looking at Mark Pope's resume because Pat Kelsey, our coach, actually, I think, has a better resume than Mark Pope. But, Joe, you remember Nick Saban's resume at Michigan State? I mean, it didn't say greatest coach of all time on it, did it?
No, he was an average coach. They were an average program.
So I just am convinced that, like, it's like drafting a quarterback. You know, you never really know. No matter how much, every now and then there's the Andrew Luck or the Peyton Manning or somebody like that. And had Alabama or had Kentucky hired Jay Wright, you know, then that would have been okay. He's going to win there. But other than that, with these hires, there's just no way to know.
So, Jared, I threw out a scenario on the Titans draft front earlier this week where four quarterbacks go in the first four picks, two receivers right after that. And then the Titans trade back with the Bears from 7 to 9. The Bears jump up, get a receiver, and the Titans trade back and still end up with Joe Alt and get more picks in addition to it. I don't know how realistic that scenario is, but what do you make of the idea of the Titans being able to trade back slightly and still end up with Joe Alt? Is that possible in your mind?
So this is where I think you have to quantify how good you think these prospects are, you know, and they do that, you know, with the grades on the boards and things like that. You know, okay, the Alt's a 6'9", 8". And then the question is, what's Fashanu, right? Because I think it's pretty obvious that there are two left tackles, you know, two top left tackles without a serious question mark next to their name. You know, Fautanu, it's like, well, is he really a tackle or is he a guard? I know they say his arms are long enough to be a tackle, but I think we experienced this enough last year with the is he a tackle, is he a guard? So Fautanu is not the same kind of tackle prospect that Alt or Fashanu is. All the other guys are right tackles, and Amarius Mims has played like 6 games in college. So everybody else has kind of a little question mark by it, where there are two legitimate starting left tackles at the top, Alt and Fashanu. So if you've got Alt, and let's rate him out of 7, Alt is a 6'9", 5", and Fashanu is a 6'4", 5". And there's a big gap between those two, then I think you have to stick and pick and take all. If you think that they're closer than that, and Bill Callahan is telling you, because I thought the Bruce Feldman article probably gave the best insight into how people really see these guys, and I thought Bruce was excellent on your show earlier this week, but if it's like, hey, Fashanu, you know, needs a little work on his technique, but Bill Callahan says he can coach up that technique, and I can get, you know, an extra second round pick out of it because I'm going to get Atlanta and Chicago to fight over who gets the right to draft Roma Dunze, then I absolutely think it's worth the risk of doing it. And if you don't get Alt, then you get Fashanu. And so I guess it's kind of a cop-out because I'm not saying you should or you should. The question is, what is the gap between the two tackles on their board, and what does Bill Callahan think he can make of Fashanu? Because I heard Rick Spielman say on a podcast that he thinks that Fashanu is the most talented tackle in the draft, thinks he's got all pro ability, but he just needs work in run blocking. And I'm like, well, isn't that kind of what Bill Callahan's here for? I mean, this isn't Jason Hodling out there coaching him anymore. Like, this is a real coach. So I really do wonder what the difference between the two on the board is. And I actually think that might be a question that I ask at the pre-draft press conference, knowing that they're never going to tell you, you know, oh, yeah, you know, we've got – but they might give you a little hint as to how they see the two. It would not shock me if the Titans trade out. It would, though. The one thing that I do think is they're running a huge risk if they trade off that Alt pick. And whatever it is they do doesn't work and Alt becomes a star, Rand may never recover from that.
You're going to get him fired some way. You're going to find a way he could be fired. Okay, let's review some of your takes this week, Jared. This is what we should do on Friday.
Let's have a review. I want Rand Carthon to win a Super Bowl. And when Terry Bradshaw hands him that trophy, I want him, even though the general manager usually isn't up there, it's usually the owner, the coach, and the quarterback. But I mean, when they hand them that trophy, I hope that he says, I just want everybody to know, screw you, Jared Stone.
Yeah,
I can
yeah.
live with that.
Oh, you can't do it. You can live with that. You would love that. It would be like greatest moment of your life.
Well, my
what are you talking about?
My team won the Super Bowl, and that's all I care about.
That's right.
And that's why I said, my dad is 72 years old, about to be 73. I just want one Super Bowl. That's all I want.
Yeah. All right, so some of your takes this week, other than like your ridiculous paywall take of me that lost your quote-unquote competition to me. Let's see. You've also got what? Sam Darnold.
He does love
way
him some Sam Darnold.
Tua.
My goodness.
Let me tell you, Joe, we've argued Sam Darnold.
Traylon Burks' cheeks are too chunky for you. Like, what else you got?
Okay, so like this is the unfortunate part on the Traylon Burks thing, right? Again, just like with Rand Carthon, I want Traylon Burks to be successful. I have no vendetta against Traylon Burks. And if you'll remember,
he keeps wanting all these people to be successful. But by golly, he's running him out of town if he can.
I incorrectly was in favor of the Traylon Burks, A.J. Brown swap.
Correct.
So this is not, you know, like Skip Bayless like makes one opinion at the beginning and he never moves off of it, and that's not me. But I was so proud last year and so excited about Traylon Burks' season because it was obvious the work that Traylon Burks had put in. And I thought that you could really see that in his body. You could see it in his face, his jawline, everything else. You could see that he had put the work in, that he had claimed that he had put in the offseason, that the coaching staff had said that he had put in, and it really gave me hope that he was going to have a good season. Well, obviously, he didn't have a good season, but that doesn't mean he doesn't need to work hard. I mean, I saw some pictures on Instagram about 2 weeks ago, and I sent them to Caroline, and I was like, I'm a little worried here. I'm a little worried.
David. Sherlock and Dr. Watson. By Jove! Look at these photos!
I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried about – in fact, I'm going to send them to Robbie right now just
Please
so Robbie
do.
Can analyze this here. I said, I'm a little worried that Traylon Burks might be trying to compete for tackle and not wide receiver. And, you know, I didn't say anything or whatever. And then when the coach, you know, left him out of, you know, the shout-out or whatever it was, when the coach left him out of that, I was like, okay, like – there's something to this. And if you go to the official Titans podcast that Ran and Brian Callahan did at that speaker series for the Sports Council with Mike Keith, Keith asked him, what can Ridley and Hopkins do for Burks? And Callahan was just basically turned it into to have two great receivers, any young receiver could be able to look at the work ethic of those guys and follow their lead and things like that. And I'm like, Burks is a third-year pro. Like, it's not like he's a rookie out of Weber State. I mean, he is a third-year pro. And so when Brian Callahan turns that question instead of how this helps Burks, and I think Mike Keith was probably looking like, oh, yeah, you know, that'll get Burks more opportunities, the whatever. And instead it was like, well, he can look up and see the work ethic of DeAndre Hopkins and of Calvin Ridley and go from there. I think it was pretty telling that the Titans are not happy with where Burks is right now.
And TD dunked on you on Sam Darnold, I heard. I didn't get to hear
it. Well, I mean, TD just went over these stats. And, like, again, I keep saying that it's like this. Steve McNair and Kerry Collins. When Floyd Reese decided to draft Steve McNair, the question he asked himself is, what would Kerry Collins look like at Alcorn State, and what would Steve McNair look like at Penn State? And I am convinced that Sam Darnold, throughout his entire career, has either had, you know, Adam Gase and the Jets, who haven't had a good quarterback in 20 years, and Tepper in Carolina. And the one time that Tepper stepped away and took his hands out of the pot were when he fired Matt Rhule and got rid of Baker Mayfield after he had already brought in Baker Mayfield because he was unhappy with Sam after that first year. And Sam and DJ Moore and Steve Wilks, who I think is a much better coach than he gets credit for, Sam, DJ Moore, and Steve Wilks put that team back into contention. And, I mean, if it wasn't for a shootout loss to Tom Brady, in which Darnold was great, if it wasn't for that shootout loss, they're in the playoffs for a team that gave up midway through the year. And so I was texting with somebody in the media today, not going to throw him under the bus because everyone will say he's stupid for thinking this, but I told him, I said, I am getting just murdered on these Sam Darnold takes. And he texted me back and he said, I think he's going to be like Tannehill was to the Titans in Minnesota. I said, he's not going to play. But if he does, I think he might. I think Minnesota might win that division if Sam Darnold is their starting quarterback. And Tua is the most overrated crap bum. I mean, I would not pay that guy a dollar more than $25 million. As soon as Tyreek gets old and goes away, Tua goes right back in the toilet. And all these big games Tua sucks in. And so I'm sorry. You guys get, here's what happens with Tua. Tua is like Blake Bortles, except for he's accurate and Bortles.
except for he's good at playing quarterback.
No, he's not good at playing quarterback. That's the thing. Bortles, and you guys remember this. Remember when Bortles put up those stats that were like 40, like he was second in the league in touchdowns or whatever, and nobody saw a single one of those touchdowns because Jacksonville played that regional noon CBS kickoff. Well, Tua, in the regional noon CBS kickoff games against the Jets, goes off for like 420 and six touchdowns. But when he plays a Sunday night football game, he just gets his ass handed to him like that last game against Buffalo at the end of the season or the playoff game. In fact, let me say this. Can you guys think off the top of your head a primetime national TV game where you said, man, Tua looks good?
No,
probably
I can't.
Not.
I can remember the game where he went into Baltimore and he completely destroyed them. I mean, but that wasn't on primetime, so, oh, it doesn't count.
A noon kickoff. They
It was a noon kickoff. Means nothing.
It means nothing when can only beat the Scarbinis and then you
the Baltimore Ravens on the road. Yeah.
That team didn't even make the playoffs.
Yes,
that team you're talking about, that Ravens team, did not make the playoffs.
Right. That team, when they played them, didn't have all the injuries that they had that left them out of the playoffs.
Again.
That's fine.
Let's get Tua
on
Sunday
Tua sucks.
Night football.
We got to move on. Tua sucks.
Let's get
Tua
on Sunday night football, and let's see if Tua can win some games. Because, again, you can't think off the top of your head a primetime game.
You put Tua on at 1 a.m., there's no way then, by golly.
I'll just say this. I hope you're right, and as a Green Bay Packers fan, that Sam Darnold plays all year for Minnesota.
Let me tell you what, right now. I was right about – Craig Aukerman was the same thing, right? Vrabel got up there and was like, we're third in net punting, ha! And everyone was like, oh, he showed you, Jared. And then Vrabel had that moment where he had that tail between his legs after he got beat by Indianapolis, and go in a different direction with Craig Aukerman, and I thank Craig for all of his work. And it's like, I tried to tell you guys, but you wanted me to be wrong. And so what's going to happen is when Sam Darnold, and I hope Minnesota, I hope this is all a smokescreen, and I hope they don't take J.J. McCarthy, and I hope that Minnesota takes two players with their first-round picks to help Sam Darnold out. But if Sam Darnold is the starting quarterback in Minnesota, I think he will have a renaissance-like season, and I think there's a legitimate chance that he could be comeback player of the year.
Jared, have yourself a wonderful weekend. Go attend to your new puppy. We'll talk to you next week.
There you go. See you guys.
See ya. We'll react to what Jared had to say coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you. Brought to you by Chuck McDowell Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Thanks to Jared Stillman for being with us in the last segment. Lots of takes there. He sent us the Treylon Burks Instagram photo. I mean, he's standing. I'd love to know who like the two people he's standing next to are, but I mean, I didn't come away from the Treylon Burks photo thinking to myself, well, he's ridiculously out of shape. Now, I will say, and TD brought this up too. Like, you know, Treylon Burks, he doesn't look like, you know, DK Metcalf or anything. He doesn't look like AJ Brown. Like, there's, you know, he's certainly, like, you don't look at Treylon Burks and think, oh, it's like some Greek god out there running around out there. But he looks, I mean, I don't look at the photos of Treylon Burks.
You got that right there? You got that?
I do. I'm not worried about his cheeks.
The jaw. Jared was excited about the jawline last year. The jawline really got him going.
It was the most underrated part.
I mean, he just looks like a dude on the go. I don't know. Is his hair a little bit longer? Does that make Jared think he's gained weight? I don't know, man. But Jared had an unnamed media member, which is kind of like someone saying, like, my girlfriend who lives in Canada, you know.
Or, you know.
My unnamed media member said, you know, Sam Darnold's going to be amazing.
Hawaii. Oh,
okay.
Lene Kukua.
Oh, there you go.
Shout out to Manti Te'o. I think I may have uncovered this. Aaron Brewer's gone. So, like, the you know, we're everybody's trying to – Jared's trying to get Aaron Brewer to step on a scale last year to prove how much he weighed.
That's right.
Maybe we've switched to Burks. We got to have somebody stepping on the scale.
He thinks both of them, Aaron Brewer and Treylon Burks, are 240 pounds.
The same size. Yeah. Yes. Aaron Brewer and Treylon Burks, the same playing weight.
Again, Jared, hey, guess your weight, Jared Stillman here, guess your weight. Wait, by the way, is he doing, speaking of a carnival, is he doing the dunk tank or whatever?
Dunk tank tomorrow,
I forgot to ask him. He's doing it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That could get some high-level participation. I may go out there and throw a few.
I might, you know, depending on the timing. If I if the time works out, I might go out there and, you know, for a good cause.
Yeah. Why not?
All right. Let's do it.
The Sam Darnold stuff is very entertaining. TD, yeah. TD had enough of that one yesterday.
Yeah, I wish I would have heard that. TD's texting me now, too. So we're having some fun at Jared's expense. You know, one guy Jared mentioned in there, I guess we could get to it next segment. There is one guy that he completely dismissed as he's going through the linemen that I think deserves a little bit of consideration.
Okay.
More consideration than I think even we've been giving him. Maybe other people have been giving him.
Okay. We'll get into that coming up next. Take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. Tune in to 93.3 Classic Hits today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Memphis Redbirds on the road for a doubleheader. Pregame at 4:50, first pitch at 5:05. Coverage also available on the 93.3 Classic Hits app and at 93.3ClassicHits.com. Sounds Baseball presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. It's time for another 2024 Masters Leaderboard update. Bryson DeChambeau leading the way at 7-under. He gets going today at 10:54 our time. Scottie Scheffler right behind him at 6-under. Tiger Woods back on the course this morning. He's already dropped a shot, so was it 1-under heading into the day? Now he's back to even par. He is finishing up his first round, and then will then go right into the second round later today as well. So Tiger back at even par and just had a nice chip on 15, now going for a par putt. So there's your Masters Leaderboard update. Brought to you by Burger Republic. Go try their limited-time Green Jacket Burger for a true Masters experience. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. Joey Lineman that apparently we are not giving enough credit to and or love for heading into this season for the Tennessee Titans that could be involved here moving forward.
Well, yeah, one guy, Jared, just quickly he mentioned his name, but I think he is worth a little discussion because I'm very intrigued by him, and I'm very intrigued by where he's going to go in this draft. Because obviously we talk about J.C. Latham, and could he switch to the left side? You know, I mean, there are other guys, other tackles that you talk about, and then you can go to the second round tackle. You know, Patrick Paul, like, is he a second round guy who would be there at 38 if you did something else, you know, at 7 or whatever, or if you moved back but you still have 38 and maybe you add a third, whatever the scenario may be. Amarius Mims of Georgia, I think, deserves a real look. And, of course, I have read a good chunk of The Beast from Dane Brugger. And, by the way, again, we will have Dane on
Monday
at 7:30 to talk about The Beast. The Beast, the draft guide, the most – I mean, it's absurd amount of work and amount of in-depth, you know, analysis of these prospects. Mims is fascinating. You know, Mims, 21 years old. Five-star, 6'7", 340, eight. The biggest knock on him, like, when you go to weaknesses, and Dane Brugger on his profile, and the weaknesses starts with only 8 starts, see, I like that as a first weakness. And certainly, you know, you dig into it more. I mean, right now he needs more work, in particular in the run game. But talk about, you know, he's got a 3.6 GPA at Georgia. And he's just he's a talent. And I think a guy who could be a long-term, really good left tackle potentially in the NFL. And that's the thing, that as Dane writes, you know, there's projection involved in his draft grade. He has him as the 5th tackle, but his best football's ahead of him. And so that talent, and look, if you're the Titans, you want to give Will Levis the best possibility this year immediately. You want to be able to plug in a left tackle and say, boom, you're the starting left tackle. You're good right now. Go. But this does look like a guy who has the combination of has that talent. Yes, there's more work, but you do have Bill Callahan. Like, this is the Bill Callahan angle that I think makes more sense, which is someone with that big-time talent, someone who's certainly a first-rounder, but maybe needs a little more work than some of these guys. And now you combine him with this great offensive line coach, and what could it be? Maybe it's not. Maybe it doesn't pay off until like 2025, and so you have a little. It's a little rougher this year, but like, the Titans, they want to win as much as they can this year, but they're not. They're not contending for anything this year. So, like, there's a guy that if you did move back, that I think you'd have to at least throw into the discussion. And well, it might be a higher pick. He might go high. Like, if you move back to whatever it is, 12, 13,
yeah,
that might be high for him. But, you know, I don't – but that's the kind of quote-unquote reach that, to me, could make sense if you actually believe the ceiling's that high.
You know what I don't want to see them do? Reach for an offensive lineman. They've done enough reaching for offensive linemen, enough offensive tackle picks that haven't worked out. Like, to me, the most boring part of this is just like, well, okay, Joe Alt's there, take Joe Alt. But that's probably the way to go. I mean, like, I understand, like, Mims' size is very intriguing. I mean, you're talking 6'7". He's listed at 330. Some people have him at 340. I've seen 342, if you want to get really specific about it. So it kind of varies a little bit. Either way, he's gigantic, and there's athletic ability there to go along with it. So he's very intriguing to me. I just, if I'm a Titans fan, based on the Isaiah Wilson pick, based on the Dylan Raiden's pick, Nicholas Petit-Frere, we'll see what's happened. They've drafted so many tackles the last few years, and none of them have hit yet. I don't want a project. I want somebody that you feel great about if I'm a Titans fan and you're going tackle.
Yeah, but though I hear you, but I don't know that those guys were – I mean, those are just bad choices. You know what I mean? Like
right. But, I mean, to say Mims won't be a bad choice?
Like, oh, no. I don't know.
I mean, look, who's to say Alt won't be a bad choice? Like, everybody thinks Alt's a sure exactly. thing. But I'm just saying, like, if you've got the if you're going tackle, and I threw out the trade back scenario earlier of trading back, picking up more picks, and going that way. Like, if Joe Alt's available to you at 7, I'm not opposed to trading back. If you get a really good deal, I'm not opposed to going Malik Nabers. But, like, if I'm a Titans fan and Alt is there, who most people consider to be the – you know, and you said this yesterday, and I think it's a really important point. Like, I think sometimes we probably don't value the high floor as much as we should. Like, it seems like he's got a pretty high floor, and I think there's something to be said for that with Alt. And then you hope he gets to his ceiling, which could be, you know, a perennial all-pro type player.
Yeah. I mean, I would take Alt, you know. But if you – but, like, I guess if it's like – well, look, it all depends on their evaluation. But if you were in that situation where it was too good of an offer, you moved too far back to get Alt or whatever, maybe the Chargers stun everyone and they yeah. take him anyway, and you're like you're left, you know, with no chance to take him. I look at Mims. There's so much Latham talk, and I just think Mims
not
is,
enough Mims
is yeah, Mims is intriguing. Yes, it is. Sure, it's a gamble. But, like, all indications are really encouraging with him. And, again, like, the way he played against Ohio State even when he got thrown in there. And at that point, I guess that would have been – yeah, that was the end of his second year in college. I mean, 3 years in college. So, yeah, it's a project, but also it's just – it's basically just, like, because of timeline, it's a project, you know? I mean, most offensive linemen have a redshirt year automatically, you know? I mean, even in today's college football. So – at his age, I think he's – if you got into that situation, I think he's got to be – I'd love to know what they think of him. And, again, this is where
– you're not going to avoid
we
him.
We can sit here and talk about who's a project and who isn't. But Bill Callahan is and Brian talked about that the other day, as an evaluator, not just as a coach.
You're not going to avoid him because he went to Georgia and so did Isaiah Wilson?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got Sam on the text. I'm still scared of big Georgia tackles. You just can't – yeah, you can't do it.
Those guys,
I understand.
Those Georgia players.
Yeah. There's one or two that have done okay in the NFL in recent years.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in, Chad. Chad, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good to be here, guys. I've studied these drafts over the years, and you always have to look at best available. Two things that can really get you in trouble. Looking at positions, like what, you know, guys will sit around and talk for hours about what position does the Titans need to draft. You got to kind of throw that out. You really have to be true to your big board. And then you got to stay away from big name players. I remember, and that worries me a little bit about Joe Alt. Great name, right? great pedigree, great all across the board. You got to kind of just throw it out and look at him as like player X and how does he look on tape. And one guy that jumps out on me for this draft is Cooper DeJean, Iowa. And you're looking at like mid, you know, 20, 23, 25. And I'm really looking at that Vikings trade because I do believe the Vikings are desperate to go up and get a quarterback, J.J. McCarthy. If he's there at 7, I'd already have that thing worked out with Minnesota where you can go back to 11 and grab probably best available player there, might be tackle number 2. And then I'm looking at that 23, and I'm crazy about Cooper DeJean just as a best player available. You're talking about a playmaker who can play in between hybrid cornerback and safety, runs a 4-3, but made so many plays in special teams and on defense, scoring the ball in the secondary on defense. So that's kind of where I'm at with it, fellas.
Yep, thanks for the call, Chad. Well, somebody did score for Iowa.
You know, yes. No, he was
the defensive player out.
Like, he really was like their biggest threat to score.
He was.
As a punt returner. Now, or slash, you know, defensive.
Yes.
Interceptor.
Now, I do look. I hear what he's saying about like his larger point on like the position part of it and staying true to the big board. I also think like, you know, position has to factor in and need factors in to some degree. Like the Titans right now with McCreary, Cheeto, and L'Jarius Sneed probably don't need to be drafting a cornerback. It seems like a luxury you just can't afford right now. When you have so many needs elsewhere, like you do have to factor that in. So I understand sticking to the big board.
Yeah.
But like if let's say they went through that scenario and they ended up with like 11 and 23 somehow. Like I don't think Cooper DeJean is probably a way you should go there if you're the Titans.
Yeah. I mean I like him. I mean
yeah. I mean he's a good player, but
You have to, and I'm
going
to
play.
Yeah, I agree with just sitting around and talking about positions. Or what about this position, that position? You have to go with the talent at hand. But need still, I mean, it has to be factored into the discussion, too. I mean, Cooper DeJean, I think, is going to be a good NFL player. Yeah, it's not like people are talking about him in the top 10
right.
For a reason.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, it is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. We will do that next. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rexroad.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program, either the Rex Rant, the Rob Rant, or Nicked Off. Any of the three will suffice. Joe Rexroad, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Well, first I have an announcement because a lot of people are asking, and Bill Wickett of the Nashville Predators has let me know here. Stillman, 5 to 5:30.
Oh, yeah.
On the plaza in front of Bridgestone Arena.
That line could get long. The dunk take.
Everyone is hoping for a nice long line. So I don't know if I can get out there that early. You going to get out there that early to do that?
For that, yeah.
We should let the people, you know, we get to take shots at Jared all the time.
That's true.
I mean, you'd normally make me do it, but, you know, but I compensate, overcompensate probably.
That's why I normally let you do it.
A 9-minute run.
Yes! Play it again!
A 9-minute run.
Oh, my God. That's going to be the best drop in the history of this station.
Yeah.
That is the best drop in the history of the station. Give me one more.
A 9-minute run.
God. Next time we have him on, I just want to like scratch that.
Monday's Rex Rant is just going to be a 9-minute run over and over and over again.
That's a good idea. And like, yeah, cut it up and scratch it a little bit, yeah. And make it into a little remix. All right. Okay, to a little bit more serious subject matter here. We have not talked about this. It happened, like a lot of things, after our show was off the air yesterday. O.J. Simpson passing away after a battle of cancer. I did not know he was battling cancer.
I didn't either.
Age 76. So, and a lot of people immediately said it, and they were right. This is a good day to log off social media. So there was a lot. There was a lot of discussion yesterday. The first thing I'd like to point out is, you know, O.J., 76, and you feel bad for his family because his family's done nothing wrong.
Correct.
Also, let's Nicole Brown Simpson would be 64 years old today, and Ronald Goldman would be 55 years old today. And that's what my answer would be when I see the two words put together, quote, complicated legacy. Now, it's really not, guys. It's not complicated. I don't give a crap about his football career. I used to care. We used to care about it. I used to love OJ like everybody else. I'm not old. You may be surprised. I'm not old enough to remember him playing.
I am surprised.
But thank you. But like the Naked Gun movies, the Hertz commercials, the sideline reporting, he was awesome. But the legacy is what happened on June 12th, 1994 in Brentwood, California, period. That's it. I'm sorry. Like, that's great that he had a great football career and he was famous. We can talk about that. There was some good discussion. There was a good column by Dan Wetzel, friend of the show, Yahoo, on the trial, because the trial and all of that was a seminal moment. I mean, really, I mean, anybody who's – and you wouldn't. You were what, three?
I was two.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, if you lived it, you understand it's – really, it's pre-internet. Yeah, I mean, basically, there were some people logging on their AOL accounts – you know, I guess in June of 94, but it was very, you know, pre-internet, certainly pre-social media, all this stuff, the entire country. Frankly, I'm watching an NBA Finals game, and they cut into this Bronco on the highway, and I'm actually angry because I was into the NBA Finals game.
Is that Rockets-Knicks?
It was. Yeah. And then the trial and our entire society was wrapped in it, and there's so much to it. So, to remember that now, I mean, those are good discussions because obviously you think about that, right? I cannot possibly recommend if there's anything, and I've said this independently of anything happening. I've said this before. I'll say again. If you have not seen OJ Made in America, the multi-part documentary, I wouldn't recommend anything beyond that, and not just because we're talking about OJ Simpson and his passing today. It is an incredible work. It's really important. And if you watch it, not that you should have any doubt anyway, but like you will not have any doubt about what happened on June 12, 1994 in Brentwood, California, and how that trial came to be and all the things that went into it. Rodney King years before it, the LAPD history, there's so much to it. And it's such a perfect example of two things being true that some people can't understand. Like Mark Furman can be a horrible racist and still it's very obvious what happened to Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman, and that's OJ's legacy. So I feel bad for his family. They've done nothing wrong. I feel bad again for the Brown and Goldman families. They are now reminded of this, and like social media, I say I did have a problem with, you know, like all the jokes and stuff like that. That's just me. I just feel like yesterday wasn't the day for it. You knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
But we certainly, no one needs to do any BS. I saw someone say he, quote, had a, I said complicated legacy. Someone wrote, he had a complicated life. Well, he was a superstar football player and a famous person, and then June 12, 1994 happened. And that's it. That's the legacy.
Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, I was so young when this whole thing went down that, you know, I don't have the same perspective on it or certainly knowledge on it as most people. I mean, the honestly, what my information on this really came from, I remember watching – I think ESPN did a 30 for 30, and I've not seen OJ Made in America, so I have to check that out. But I think ESPN did a 30 for 30. I think it was just called like June 17, 1994. And it was highlighting basically how the chase down in the Bronco put the sports world to the stop. You mentioned the NBA Finals game. I think the Stanley Cup Finals was going on with the Rangers playing. So there was all that going on, and then there was OJ and the Bronco, and that was kind of like I remember watching that because it came out a few years ago. I remember watching that and thinking to myself, so this was pre-internet. Everybody's watching these sporting events. I mean, there's only a certain amount of channels people have, and this is all over the place of just that white Bronco and the dozens upon dozens of cop cars behind him there. So that was like me learning about the trial and everything that went into that really came from that, watching that 30 for 30.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good too. But yeah, I mean, really, Made in America, it's so worth the time. Like the entire, it's very deep. It goes into his childhood and talk to his childhood friends. I mean, it's very, it's just one of the best, maybe the best documentary I've ever seen. It's and it's important too, you know. And one thing to keep in mind, like, I mean, he wrote a book if I did it. I mean, yeah. You know, he profited off their deaths. I mean, he wrote a book and basically laid out what happened, and then just it was under the guise of if I did it.
Right.
To make money off of their murders. I mean, there's nothing complicated here. It's absolutely horrific.
Yep. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Talking with TD. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans as we are now less than 2 weeks away from the first round of the NFL draft. That's coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.